Welcome to Backstage, where we talk about what's going on behind the scenes at Relay FM and also share our knowledge to help you start a podcast of your own. My name is Mike Hurley, and I'm joined by my co-founder here at Relay FM, Mr. Stephen Hackett. Hi, Stephen Hackett.
Hello, Michael Hurley.
What's going on right now?
You know, there's nothing next to this bullet point in the Google Doc, because I feel like things are back to normal for the first time after a while, right? Membership drive is done. Podcast-a-thon and St. Jude fundraising is done, which again, thank you for those who participated. It was an amazing September.
Yep.
So I kind of feel like we're just in the groove of looking out over the rest of the year and kind of just getting back into the routine after a little bit.
Yeah, we were just talking before we began recording about like our holiday podcasting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I do lots of weird and wonderful episodes on my shows towards the end of the year, stuff like the upgradees. We were talking about that. So it's kind of funny to be thinking already, oh, the holidays, but it's November at the end of this week. So I've got to start getting moving on the upgradees, which is kind of a funny thing to think about. It does feel like I was also looking at my calendar today and was kind of surprised that it looked a little more normal, because I had 1 week where it felt okay again, and then Apple dropped that second Apple event, and then it went all mad again.
Yeah.
And I remember feeling at that moment, which was a few weeks ago, that it was the first normal week that I think we'd both probably had since like March. Because when like the pandemic really kicked in, you know, like we were working so hard to get all of this up and running, the membership stuff. It really was like we probably compressed a year's worth of work into 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And so we, you know, that was wild. And then we went straight into WWDC whilst increasing our own output, right, with the membership shows. So that was, you know, something that took a while. I don't know about you, but it's taken a while for it to kind of embed itself in my process. And now I feel like I've gotten it pretty under control, like putting together Upgrade Plus and Mortex. Like they're pretty solid now, the process that I've got. But then rolling straight from that into everything else, you know, like the multiple Apple event, Apple events, podcast. It's been an absolutely wild year. And I do feel like you said, that things are starting to stabilize now.
Yeah, there's probably one more Apple event. And I think that may personally, at least, may be a bigger thing for me than you, if it's Mac-centered.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to get an Apple Silicon Mac in here and really dive into it. But yeah, it feels like calmer waters are ahead, which is good.
I think it depends. One of the things that has added to my personal stress level over the Apple events is the interviews that me and Jason have got to do on Upgrade.
Sure.
We did one on Connected 2. And again, it's like, if we get the opportunity to do another one with the next event, which seems possible, I guess, but I don't know how they work, that adds like a lot of pressure in.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's another whole recording and I do a lot of prep for them. So I agree that in theory, it shouldn't be as bad for me, because I'm not going to have as much dedicated output about Apple Silicon as you. But if we end up getting the opportunity to interview someone from Apple again, it's like that adds probably the weight of like two episodes of a show in prep and edit, and they're really heavy stuff.
Yeah, when I've done those in the past, it's a lot of prep time. You know, you want to make sure you're asking good questions, that you're getting the most out of your time. And then there's just the stress of, I want to do a good job because it has more people paying attention to it, right?
Yep.
So yeah, it is fun to do that, but it does come with its own stress. Now, I agree with you about the workflow around the extra content for members. In fact, I was telling my wife, Mary, actually just this last week, I was like, I finally feel like I've kind of got my hands around editing both Connected and Connected Pro. Like, I've tweaked my workflow repeatedly, and I finally have something that works well for me. And it just took a while to get there, but now I feel pretty comfortable with how that's going. So, yeah, it just takes time when you change something.
Like, it is a lot more work. Like, I'm used to the process now, but, like, it takes more in prep and actual production of content, and then the finalization of the content. But I would say, you know, like, because of our members and the great response we've had, it's very worth it. kind of like money to time. So
yeah, membership has totally been amazing this year, and yeah. and has really, I think, put you and I both at ease with some of the concerns we had at the beginning of the pandemic. And mm-hmm. not that the world's still not scary, of course it is, but I think you and I feel much more settled in how the company has fared this because of membership.
Definitely. And like, whilst kind of our advertising business has mostly stabilized at this point, one thing that is a little unstable is payment times have
yes.
gone a bit weird in some instances, which I totally understand why that is happening. But the membership, having the consistent, you know, the membership will always hit at the same time because people's cards are just debited, right? That has taken a lot of pressure off of me in being concerned about kind of the payment windows that we're seeing with the companies that we work with. So mm-hmm. thank you so much to everyone who is there enjoying the content, enjoying the Discord, and then also providing something for not just me and Steven, but all of our hosts that you know, no matter what you give to, the hosts that are related to those things will be feeling the relief from that too. So we really, really appreciate it, and we hope that you continue to enjoy it.
I check the Discord before I check Twitter every day. It's just like my default now.
Yeah, it's one of my first destinations too. It's a really, really nice place, and there's a lot of great conversation going on in there all the time. I like to lurk in that Discord like I lurk in most.
All right, so let's talk about branding. How about that?
Yeah, so branding was our topic for today. And when we come to do these episodes of Backstage, we tend to approach them the way of like me and Steven would put together an outline. But this topic, when we asked for questions, we got so many questions that we decided we would kind of just go through and answer a large selection of the questions that we received. And we may come back to this in more detail, depending on the feedback that we get from this episode. But the questions were so varied that I feel like it kind of covered most of the areas that we would talk about anyway. So I thought we could maybe go through those, and then we can maybe come back to this in a future episode.
That sounds good to me. And all of these questions are from Discord. So if you're a member and you're not hanging out in there, I think it's time to join. Mm-hmm. We know there are a bunch of y'all out there who haven't checked it out yet. So it is 100% Discord fed this time.
The Discord invite link, can we put it in the show notes for this episode?
Yeah, it should. Yeah, I can do that.
All right, first question comes from Tony. Tony wants to know, how important is it to get the right name for a show versus just picking whatever name so you can get the show out there?
The name is important, but I don't think it's like the ultimate
yeah.
importance, right? I mean, you want to find something that is as unique as you can make it. We're going to talk more about that a little bit later on, about sort of namespace pollution. You want to find something memorable, something that's easy to spell because you're saying it and people have to go search for it. But I don't know if you've got to really pull your hair out over getting exactly the right thing. Is that fair? What do you think?
I think that something that I might say a lot during this episode, which is something that I say a lot when talking about these things, is at a certain point, the name just becomes the thing. And so it stops becoming as pivotal to you and the people that consume it. It will always be a thing, you know, for people coming to the show fresh. But at a certain point, the name is just the name and the thing is just the thing.
Right.
There is some importance to trying to name it in a way that feels good. One good naming tip that I'll give, I heard Kevin Rose say this once. When talking about apps, you know, because he does VC stuff now and people pitch apps to him. If you cannot say the name of your thing to somebody in a crowded bar, in a crowded environment, and they wouldn't be able to pick it up.
A crowded Zoom call.
If you cannot say the name of your podcast to somebody from a 2-meter distance and they could hear it, socially distanced conversation, then it basically, if you can't say the name to someone, just say it, and then they go find it on their own, then it's not a good name. So think about spelling, right? Like don't have a fun spelling, right? Because then people won't be able to find it, all that kind of stuff. So it's something, it's just like a really good kind of gut check thing to think about. It's like if you can't just say the name of your thing, which is especially important for a podcast, and people know what you're saying, then rethink it.
I would throw in there too, to be wary of things that are really trendy. So I'll give you an example. 512 Pixels wasn't always called 512 Pixels. Its first name was Fork Bomber, which is a programming joke. And the domain didn't have the final R in it, like Twitter and Flickr and, you know, all the very like 2006, 7, 8 kind of branding that websites were doing. And very quickly, that name felt old because of that. I think the same thing.
Or like both of mine and your Twitter handles.
Yes. I was going to say, we have eyes in our Twitter handles, and that is a pretty old kind of thing now.
That was fun back in 2006, 2007.
Yeah.
But now it doesn't make any sense.
That's right. And so that is something to be wary of. If there's something that's really trendy, maybe don't go that way. Now, we have gone that way with our membership shows, but you can't search for those, right? Because it's all hidden behind Memberful. So we were willing to break that rule and kind of be tongue-in-cheek with the membership shows. But for something that needs to be searchable, that's in a directory somewhere,
yep,
should be easy to find, and be wary of things that could really date it.
Matt asks, given how easy it is to make a podcast these days, what are your thoughts on namespace pollution?
I don't think this is unique to podcasting. It has happened.
Domain names.
Yeah, domain name, company names, product names. Namespace pollution just happens in every sector that you can possibly think of. It just means you have to be a little more creative.
Yeah, I think as well, when you're coming to name a show, and a really important thing is to search Apple Podcasts and make sure that a name doesn't already exist. Like Apple Podcasts is the one true source. I don't know if this is still the case anymore, but I know at a certain point that Apple would not accept a show for approval in their system if it shared a name of an already existing show. And honestly, if the name of your show already exists, you shouldn't be doing it anyway, right? Like pick something unique.
Yeah.
So always give Apple Podcasts a search very early on in the process. You know, this is similar to domain names, right? Like when you think you have an idea for a name, search to see if the domain name's available before you start getting attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you may lose it.
Yeah. You may have never had it.
Indeed. Similarly, Sam's question is, have you ever changed a podcast name if you realize the social media accounts were already taken?
No, because social media handles should be part of that research. When you search for Apple Podcasts, you should look at Twitter. If Facebook is important to your audience, you should look at Facebook. That is part of the research. Is this name been used already?
I would put those social media handles at the lowest part of that totem pole because there's like modifications that you can make.
At underscore Relay FM on Twitter.
Yeah. This is so frustrating that if anybody out there can help us with this, it would be greatly appreciated. There is an at Relay FM Twitter account, which is a suspended account. Twitter's rules say if you have a trademark, you can take the name. We have a trademark, but they won't pay any attention. We've tried to do this. If anybody out there knows a better way for us to get that account, we'll take it. Please.
Yes,
be
please.
Much appreciated. But, you know, like we've done it in the past. We did the underscores for a while and put the FMs in there. And really because like once we decided on our name for the company, which was a very long and arduous process, including lots of fighting over many days.
Mm-hmm.
And it was neither of us came up with the name. Our designer, Simon, came up with the name in the end. We thought, well, we got the domain names. We got the name. We like it. We're just going to find some weird social media thing. And over time, we've added like pod or podcast or whatever into the name. You can make it work.
Yeah, it's changed a little bit over time. We wanted to be consistent in the beginning because we knew it was a little unusual. And if most of the shows matched that format, we thought it would help sink in. Yep. But over time, that's become less important.
Yeah, and we changed some as well. I think Cortex and Upgrade, I changed them over time to make more sense.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I changed Upgrade actually. Cortex, I did though. I changed it to Cortex Podcast because it's just nicer to read.
Yeah.
Marlies asks, how important is artwork for a podcast?
I have a lot of thoughts about this because podcasting has a really weird, this is a weird thing about it in discovery. That for an audio program, people are basically exploring directories visually. And so let's go back to your example of someone socially distanced tells you the name of their show. and you go and search for it, you're not going to hear their voice, right? You're going to see their artwork first. It's very weird. Mm-hmm. But that means that the artwork is important. It means that, I think at least, that the name should be really easy to spot on the artwork, especially at smaller sizes. And I think that it should be unique, and it should fit with what the show is going to be about, and have that personality in it. But yeah, it's weird, right? Like audio product being searched visually, it's very strange.
Yeah, and there are so many considerations, and I don't really feel like I have a good sense of them. Like, in, you know, like you've got to try and have things at certain sizes, and they've got to be nice and consistent. Apple has some guidelines for this. They've produced a bunch of stuff over the years. They have like marketing guidelines, which I recommend that you look through. It's, you know, it's like a good thing that exists, and it's another resource. But I wouldn't necessarily say that you should follow them to the letter. But one of the things that I know that they talk about and in having conversations with people in the Apple Podcast team over the years, they really believe in readability at small sizes. And so having small text and having small logos and stuff to try and shy away from that where you can.
Yeah, I think that is definitely important. I'll put a link to Apple's podcast support stuff in the show notes, because it is a fantastic resource. Yeah, even though there's a lot more to podcasting than just Apple Podcasts, they are the default starting place. And so things that they decide or that they recommend, they really do play well across a bunch of different apps.
Yeah, and also these guidelines to set podcaster.apple.com, they really kind of help you approach your show like it's like a business endeavor, like a serious thing, which I also really endorse, you know, like approach the thing like it's serious. And if you can do that, it will help set you up more for success. Even if it's a fun thing that you're doing, think about all of this stuff, right? Like, don't just use the first name that comes to your head because it's the first name that comes to your head, and then draw some artwork in Microsoft Paint and like call it a day. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like try and put a little bit of thought into it up front, because it will help you in the long run. Tony asks, what do you wish you knew about branding before starting your first podcast?
What do you think?
That I'm no good at it and need help. You know, like I've tried over the years to make artwork for shows, and this was because that was when it was all I could do, you know, or like I didn't know how to get started or who to ask or how to find help. And they were all terrible, you know, like they served a purpose, but they weren't any good. I don't think that it harmed me as such, but it was a thing that, like, now looking back at it, I realized that even if I would have put a bit of effort and a very small amount of money in, I could have gotten some help, because there are people that are way better at this than me, you know, across an entire spectrum of price. And, you know, you can go and, like, look at Dribbble and Behance and stuff like that and find people who put information up online are trying to get some help. Like, similarly, you can also reach out to your professional network. You know, like, you might have a friend who does art stuff and they might be good at it. Or if you have a social network, you know, like Twitter or even in Discords and stuff like that, and try and find someone who shares similar interests to you but actually has the skills that you're looking for to help with some design or branding.
I think that's good advice. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, some of the early stuff I did wasn't super great, but I feel like I've gotten better at that. In fact, a lot of the membership design I've done myself, and that's been a lot of fun to take an existing design and create an alternate to it for the member episodes. Yeah, I think the big thing is, like, see if you can find somebody to help, but also just spend some time and see what seems to be working for other people. I don't think I did much of that in the beginning. That's not to copy somebody. You need to find your own feeling, your own look. You don't want to copy somebody. We've run into issues with that, of people copying our look, and we have to go talk to them. Mm-hmm. But overall, I think there's plenty of good people out there who can definitely jump in and help you with that sort of thing.
Yeah, there is this funny thing where, like, I know when I started out, there were like podcast networks and stuff, and I would look at their art and be like, all right, like, this is, I'm not going to copy this, but it will give me inspiration, right? And you make a thing, and it's like, well, this is now in kind of like the overall idea as to what this type of show would be. It's funny now to be in the situation where I see shows in and around our community, and it's like, I know where you got that idea. Right? It's just like, we have a visual style, which, you know, like, is mostly encapsulated by a circular item with very large title type. And it's just funny to see elements of that spreading out now.
So still on this thread, Terrence asked, has Relay paid agencies or consultants for branding work before? And if not, is there a scenario in the future where that would make sense?
Agencies and consultants, no. We've worked with many people over the years, like mostly for visual stuff. Simon, who we mentioned previously, who's our designer, is basically, you know, everything that's visual he has touched in some way. I do imagine that if we ever wanted to actually rebrand, like fully rebrand, we would maybe go in a direction like that. I don't know, right? Like where we might want to bring in more professionals. But I have no desire to do that.
Yeah, that's the only thing that came to mind for me is if we're going to do like a real top to bottom overhaul of the brand. But yeah, I don't think that's in the cards. And I think for how we work and kind of what we want, you know, working with Simon and other folks, that fits us better anyways, right? Like, I mean, before this, I worked at like a digital and branding agency, right? Like that was my, you know, 3 or 4 years of job before this. And so I've been on the other side of that table, and I don't want to go back into that world unless we feel like we have to. Yeah. You mentioned earlier that Simon came up with the name. Adina also helped us in that. Cause she has,
I would say she mediated.
She mediated that for us.
Yep. To stop us from murdering each other.
Yeah. The biggest, we've told the story before, the biggest fight you and I have ever had was over naming the company. And I should say too, like, it's really pretty rare that you and I disagree in a way that leads to, like,
Let's not talk for a few hours.
Yeah, or like a heat exchange. Like, sometimes we disagree, but it turns out that one of us just will defer to the other, just doesn't care that much, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because we sort of handle different parts of the business, there's not a lot of stuff in the middle of that Venn diagram that we really argue about, and we get along really well. But naming the company was a nightmare. Like, I remember very distinctly at one point, like, I was in like Home Depot and I was getting something and you were like sending me names and I was like, I hate all of this. It was just so much back and forth.
It was tough.
And Simon actually came up with the name Relay and then did the branding. And
it's worth mentioning that like it shouldn't and it wouldn't normally be this hard, but we had so much riding on it. Way more than you typically would, right? Where, you know, we were really aiming to make a splash, having already been in the industry, in our world. So when we only had one chance for it to make sense, and if it didn't, that could have been make or break. And typically, you're not in these types of situations.
Yeah, most people don't spend their life saving starting the first podcast, you know?
No, but like if you do, then I really think that we need to have a bit of a conversation about that. But you know, it's like we're in quite a different. I've never spent so much time and effort on a brand of anything than we did on just the overall brand for the company. Most of the show stuff is much more simple.
It is.
All right. So next question comes from Tony. How important is the edit of the show to the show's brand? Which is a very interesting question.
It's a fascinating question. I think it can be important. So the example I always give is Ungeniused, our show about weird Wikipedia stuff. That show is fully scripted, I think, as most people know. Mm-hmm. And I do a really specific edit in there. I get rid of all restarts, any ums or ahs or mouth noises. There's very little conversational feel in Ungenius. Part of that brand is we want it to be dense, and it's like a little 8-minute podcast snack, which I think is the term that you use sometimes, which I love. And so for that show, we couldn't produce it as like a podcast snack if it was us rambling for 30 minutes. As I look down at my call recorder, how long we've been talking now.
Different show,
right? So for a show like this, it's you and I talking about our experience. And so it's going to be very conversational. So just, it depends on what you want to do. I would say that it's more important that the edit is consistent than trying to like make it its own like factor in what the show is.
Yeah, but I do agree with the overall premise that it does add to the brand of the show if you are particular about it,
mm-hmm.
right? So like if you are the type of show that does things in a particular way, it will add to the brand. And this can come in the sense of like sound effects and stuff like that. If that's your bag, that's part of the brand, you know, and this comes music, jingles.
Yeah.
Jingling, if you want, if you're a Christmas show, you know, like it is important to the brand. But the most important parts of that are the visuals and the naming.
Matt asks, with services like Anchor and other hosting platforms, how important is it to have your own website? Do people actually care about that?
I think the having your own website thing is not so important. I think having your own domain name is more important, so you can direct it to where you want. But like a lot of companies offer their own kind of service, you know, like a lot of hosting companies offer their own website creation stuff. And if that's a real problem for you, then I recommend that you go for it. I would suggest, though, in most instances, to try and have your own domain with your own RSS feed attached to that domain if a service allows it. So like, you know, it could be, you know, like backstage.com/feed or whatever. So then if you moved somewhere else, you might be able to get some consistency. But, you know, at the end of the day, if you do have to move to another service, you can get your audience, most of your audience, to come with you. But mostly what I'm saying is website stuff can be difficult and it can be a stumbling block for people. And if you have a tool, you know, something like an Anchor or Libsyn, or you know, you could build the website on Squarespace and host the audio elsewhere. Like it's very simple to do a lot of these things. I recommend you do that, but at very bare minimum, make sure that you have your own domain name.
Yep, I totally agree with that.
All right, Rob asks, given that Relay has a consistent brand style across all of its shows, but other networks don't, what are your thoughts on this, and what was the rationale for your choice?
The rationale was pretty simple, is that we wanted people who come across one of our shows like online or in an app or on in a tweet or something to know that it is on Relay visually and know that that means a certain level of quality can be expected, right? That if that little R is in the upper left-hand corner and it looks like a Relay show, then that should mean something to listeners, which is why we do fit everything to that rough grid. Now, over the time that we've been around, we've expanded a little bit, right? It's not all just all circles. It's kind of artwork in the middle.
We've expanded. So like that original idea was when we only had 5 shows and mm-hmm. we maybe have 7. Now we're like over 20 and have had like over 30. We're more willing to break out of the rigid structure that we had at first. All of our shows still follow a similar, like consistent theme.
Yeah, like if you go to /shows on the Relay site and scroll down, there's no doubt that all these things are related,
mm-hmm.
which is what we want.
And we like that. You don't have to do that, but we like that. And I see arguments on all sides for it. Like you can, you know, if you don't do it this way, you can have more control over the branding and it can more connect with the show. Like I get that. There are trade-offs and we like a visual consistency
mm-hmm.
In there, and I personally don't feel like I've ever been in a situation where we have not been able to express a show's identity through the way that we like to do things. But you know, I understand that there's give and take, and this is just the give and take that we've landed on.
Yeah, I think that we've not been handcuffed by that early decision.
No.
Right, that we've moved past it in places that where it makes sense, and it's let us do what we want to do. Like, I mean, look at the test drivers, right? It's a triangle, like warning sign.
Yep.
But, you know, in line with the Pen Addict, very clearly they are related, even though the Pen Addict's artwork is 6 years older.
Yeah, and like having things like textured backgrounds Mm-hmm. You know, stuff like, you know, like the remaster artwork is incredibly different.
Yes.
It's one of the only shows that has a different color in the text, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which I feel like is something that we are able to sneak by you.
I was so overwhelmed by the beauty of that artwork. I was like, do whatever you want.
Yeah. So, but you know, like, but you can very, very clearly see that it is of a like to the others, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we play around with it where it makes sense. Similarly, we have a question around the network branding stuff from Alex, who says, how do you judge how prominent the network branding should be on the artwork of individual shows?
I mean, we wanted it to be a detail, but we wanted the show to take center stage, which is how we settled on that upper left-hand cut.
And even then, it's like the logo of the network is not very prominent at all. It's just more the color cut is, and I think they always look nice anyway.
Yeah, and the color cut relates to, except for in September when I changed them all to gold, the color cut matches the show's individual branding. And so even that, the show is influencing on how we show it, the Relay logo.
Yeah, which in a lot of cases affects the color of the page on the website. People might not know this. Every single show has its own custom highlight color on the website. So you can click through them and they'll all match the artwork in some way, which is something Steven spends a lot of time on.
I tinker with that a lot, setting up a new show.
Yeah, I know. I've seen you do it.
Yeah. Like, why is this yellow? Don't make it yellow.
Molly's asked, is changing or modernizing branding something that you're hesitant to do?
For an individual show, not necessarily. We just did Connected not that long ago. It just depends on, you know, what happens. Usually the trigger for this is a change in topic or personnel on a show. So like Free Agents became Focused with a pretty big shift. Jason left, Mike came on, changed the topic. Still the same show roughly, but with a new look moving forward. So we're definitely not afraid of that. I mean, you've rebranded your video game show with Federico several times over the years as it's changed.
Three times.
Connected, we did really because we wanted to update the artwork. We were talking about this before Connected was in the WWDC keynote several years ago, and we held off until this year and then finally did it. Really just to update that one because it was an original style, and we felt like the show's personality had become so much bigger that we wanted artwork that was a little bit louder to match it.
It was also the most pedestrian of the original five, I should say, I think. You know, like it was a white background and, you know, like it was made, I feel like, and one of the reasons we changed it was then once we added everything in, the Connected artwork felt like it was from an older time more than any of the other artworks did.
Mm-hmm.
Like the analog artwork is way more detailed and I think has stood the test of time more than the Connected one did.
Yeah.
So it was time to do something with that. And I'm really happy with where we landed.
Yeah, the same with Upgrade, right? It's also pretty close to original, but I feel like it's got, you know, the pinstriping and the
pinstripe detailing. Yeah,
yeah. So it has aged. Yeah. The Connected one was very basic early on, and it just felt like it was time to modernize a bit.
Yeah, and I think we did a good job of it.
We do.
Well, Simon did, of course. The network branding is like, that's a big one, right? Like changing that. But the funny thing is you kind of have anyway, wherever you can, you do the long artwork, which is not the way that it used to be.
Yeah, we used to use the stacked version. I'll use the horizontal one now.
Or just the R.
Yeah.
Like just the R on its own is in essence the network's logo. But I know that you have definitely gravitated to using what we call the long logo, which is the horizontal logo more and more.
There's also an alternative version that we used on t-shirts once that has solid lines that cut, like they become narrower instead of the fading. I like that one too, but the fading is...
And the pause play iPod one, I know you like that one.
So we have alternate artwork. It's evolved a little bit in those changes. Some of that took place when we redid the website 2 years ago, where that horizontal one now is the logo at the top of every page. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it has changed a little bit, but you know, the R set in Gotham with those transparent, I don't know what they are, discs flying around. Do you have a name for those in your head? I've always called them the discs. I don't know.
They're not discs. It's more like I just think of it as like a swoosh.
Swoosh?
Yeah, because a disc would suggest it was a solid circle, right?
Well, no, like the disc is like the most.
Oh, the disc is the thing, and then it's leaving a trail.
Yes, it's comets.
We should ask what Simon calls it.
Yeah.
Because Simon surely has a name.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that name is.
Yeah, I should look in the Illustrator document. Maybe he named the
original.
The
I bet it's in the original branding document.
Probably.
That was so cool when he presented that branding document to us.
Yeah.
It was like, here is a whole, this is how your company's going to look. And it felt so professional.
And we were like, and yes, sir, we agree.
I guess we should mention this, like Simon, our designer, who we used to call Frank, because he used to have a persona online, but now is full-time in the design world, so is more willing to share his name. We found him because he used to create fan art for a show that I did.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it came to, I was working on some branding for something I was working on myself and asked him if he could have a go at it. And he did such a great job that we ended up saying when it came to, we wanted to look at branding this company. It was basically, we thought we'd ask him and he came up with a great, just a great overall look at it and did it such a fantastic job. I'm looking through these documents now and I've just been reminded of the original idea for the Relay logo, which was to use the R as like a registered symbol, and three of us thought it was great and we were the only three people that ever thought it was a great idea.
Yeah, not a good idea to fake it in hindsight, but
everybody else told us that it would be a terrible idea.
Yeah, Matt Alexander yelled at us. He was like, don't do that.
Yep.
Yeah, it's amazing how this first comp is very close to what we ended up with.
Super close, but it doesn't have any name for what the swoosh is called.
We can ask him and follow up.
Mm-hmm.
Rob asks another interesting question here. How much work or thought goes into your personal brands as separate from the podcasts?
This is funny for me because I realized very recently that I don't have one. You do, right? Like you have 512 Pixels. You know, like as a brand that you maintain, which is important to you outside of Relay. And I realized I do not have that.
The future's blogging, baby. That's not true.
No, because I'm working on some stuff for a Twitch channel that I'm trying to get off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And when I realized, I quickly realized that I did not have anything, right? Like there is no other brand that I maintain that is outside of the podcasts that we produce, or is not connected, I should say, to the podcasts that we produce. So I've actually started working with someone on that, but it's all related to, still related to a specific project, which mm-hmm. is the Twitch stream and stuff. But it was interesting to come to that realization that this won't fix, right? Like I still don't have like a destination, which will be mine essentially, like you do have Vital Pixels, but
yeah.
It was interesting to realize that.
Yeah, that is interesting. I mean, we both use, you know, the iMic and ISMH other places. We're both using that on our Twitch channels. I thought a long time about branding the Twitch channel as 512 Pixels, but I ultimately went with ISMH because it's what I use on social media, and it felt a little bit closer to that. But
yeah, I actually, the URL for my Twitch channel is Mike Hurley.
Is it?
Yeah. Because that's kind of what I wished I was everywhere, Stephen. But I feel like the train has left the station.
Well, and you lose your blue check mark if you change your short name on Twitter.
Do you? Well, I don't want to do that. But I have, I do have at Mike Hurley. Like I have that Twitter account, but I just feel like it's gotten away from me now, time, so there's kind of nothing I can do about it.
Yeah, you know, it's something I think in the beginning we didn't do much of, because for so long we were just pouring everything into the network,
mm-hmm.
and our shows. And I think even to a degree, the shows, at least some of them have sort of their own brand outside of Relay as well, right? Like Cortex does, definitely. I think Connected and Mac Power Users both do to a lesser degree, where they have a Twitter account that's more than just the show's content, right? They're doing more. MPU, we have a whole user forum. People ask questions and support and all that cool stuff. So it's just been a evolving thing over time.
Okay, so final question?
Sure.
Molly's asks, do you put effort or attention into having a consistent personal brand across the multiple shows that you do?
I haven't ever really thought about this in this way. I mean, I tend to basically be me across the various shows that I'm in. Some of my shows are more serious than others, right? Like MPU is
yep.
It's pretty serious most of the time. where Ungenius and Connected are not those things. Liftoff is somewhere in between. So I get to, you know, dial the humor up and down, I guess, but I don't think I can be. I don't think you can be doing this as long as we have, like, try to cultivate a different personal brand across multiple shows. Like, I'm just me wherever I go.
Yeah, I mean, like, I show different parts of my personality in different shows a lot of the time because they're focused in different interests. But, you know, like the three of us, we feel like we have a stupid sense of humor. I'm talking about me, you, and Federico. And we really let that go on Connected, which is not something that you'll hear on other shows that I do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't make sea lion noises on other shows, and the japes don't exist. You know, like,
sure.
you make fun and poke your friends and make jokes and whatever everywhere, but like, it's different. It's very different on Connected.
Mm-hmm.
But it's part of me. It's part of my personality. But yeah, I think we all have things that are kind of what you would consider your personal brand, and they follow you from place to place, right? Like, but they're parts of your personality, and it's just like a funny thing how those two things intersect with each other when you produce something in public for the world to hear and see.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
All right, I think that's all the questions that we had. I reckon we're probably going to have more come from this, so we are very open to discussing this next time. If we don't continue with more branding stuff, we'll probably start diving into the beginning of editing.
Ooh.
On our next episode. So if you do have more questions about branding after hearing this show, the best place to ask them is to use the question mark ask backstage command in the Discord. You can also tweet with the hashtag ask backstage or email them to backstage@relay.fm, and then we'll take a look and see if we have a lot more on this. We'll come back to it. Otherwise, we're going to move into editing next time. So if you have questions about editing podcasts, also send those in same way.
Sounds good to me.
All right. Until next time, when we ask you to come backstage of us, I'm Mike Hurley, and he's Stephen Hackett. Say goodbye, Stephen.
Goodbye, Stephen.